Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, listeners. Today, we're diving deep into something we interact with constantly, I mean, every single day, but maybe you don't fully grasp information.
Right. We hear about the information age. We talk about information overload, misinformation.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Exactly.
Yep.
But what is it fundamentally? To help us get some clarity, we're looking at Michael Keeble Buckland's really important work, Information and Society.
It's such a foundational text, and honestly, maybe even more relevant now than when it first came out.
You think so? Why now specifically?
Well, you mentioned overload. That's the key. We're drowning in data, right? Buckland gives us the tools, the sort of mental framework to make sense of it all.
Okay.
To understand the systems behind it, you know, Google, libraries, databases, all of it. The things that shape what we see and what we end up knowing. Our goal today is really about getting that conceptual clarity.
Makes sense. So let's talk about the person behind these ideas, Michael Keeble Buckland. He's professor emeritus at UC Berkeley School of Information.
That's right. A major figure in library and information science, really influential.
And what makes his viewpoint unique? You said it's foundational.
Well, it's his background, I think. It's not purely theoretical, stuck in the digital world. Buckland actually worked as a librarian and administrator. He saw the whole shift firsthand.
Oh, interesting. From what to what?
From, you know, old school card catalogs and managing physical archives, think ancient scrolls even, all the way to dealing with today's huge networked digital databases. He lived through that entire transformation.
Wow, so he connects the history with the theory.
Precisely. He bridges that gap. And that lets him see the principles that last, the things that aren't just about the latest gadget or software. He pushes us to look past the techno-hype, as he might call it.
And focus on the human side.
Exactly. The human decisions baked into these systems and how they affect our access to knowledge, our society.
Okay, so that leads us to the core argument of the book, Information and Society. What's the main takeaway?
The big idea is that information isn't simple. It's actually quite ambiguous. It's complex. And it has this really dynamic back and forth relationship with society.
A symbiotic relationship, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Society shapes how we handle information, and then how we handle information turns around and shapes society. It's a constant loop.
So he's saying it's more than just data, more than just tech.
Definitely. He rejects those easy definitions. The real question is, how do we define and manage information, and what impact does that management have?
So how does he help us tackle that complexity? Is there a framework?
Yes, and this is probably his most famous contribution, this tripartite model. He says the confusion comes because we usually mix up three totally different things and call them all information.
Okay, let's break those down. This feels important. What's the first one?
The first is information as knowledge. This is the intangible stuff. It's the understanding that's purely inside your head. Personal, subjective, internal.
Got it. Like what I actually know about a topic.
Right. Then number two is information as process. This is the act of becoming informed. It's the journey, the cognitive process of learning, reading, interpreting.
Okay, so knowledge is the state, the destination in my mind. Process is the action, the journey of getting there.
You've got it. The process is the how you get informed. The book emphasizes that systems can't really manage your internal knowledge, and they can't force the process to happen correctly.
But they can manage the third type.
Yes, the third one. Information as thing. This is the one we usually think of. It's the tangible stuff. Data, documents, records, physical objects used as evidence.
The things we can actually collect and store.
Exactly. This is the form that information systems, libraries, databases, search engines can actually handle. They manage the thing, hoping to enable the process, which ideally leads to knowledge.
Okay, let's stick with information as thing for a moment, because you mentioned Buckland has a really broad definition of a document.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of mind-blowing. He basically says, forget paper. A document is any physical object used as evidence.
Any physical object? Like what?
Well, sure. A book is a document. A data file is a document. But think broader. A photograph. A fossil for a scientist.
Uh-huh.
A piece of ancient pottery for an archaeologist. Even a rock sample for a geologist. If it's an object being used as evidence to inform someone, boom, it's a document.
Wow, okay. That connects, like, Google search results right back to cave paintings or something.
Yeah.
It's all just evidence.
It provides this amazing unified way of thinking about all kinds of evidence across any field, any time period.
I really like that. It simplifies things, ironically. But okay, moving from the thing to the process, finding the document isn't enough, right?
Not at all. That's chapter three. You can give someone the perfect document, the perfect thing, that crucial rock sample, let's say, but if they don't have the background, the context, the attention.
Then the process of turning it into knowledge just doesn't happen.
Right. The system delivers the object, but the understanding, the knowledge creation, that relies entirely on the user.
Which brings us to the systems themselves. Chapter 4, Information Systems. Libraries, archives, Google. Their job is to manage the things.
Yes, they perform what Buckland terms bibliographic control. Fancy term, but it just means organizing stuff so we can find it. Cataloging, indexing, ranking.
And this is where it gets tricky, right? Because he argues these systems are.
Moral, not neutral. Not even close.
Explain that, because I think a lot of us assume, search results are objective or a library catalog just lists what's there.
Well, think about it. Someone has to decide how to classify things, whether it's the old Dewey Decimal System in a library deciding which subject a book belongs to,
Okay.
or the algorithm deciding which web page comes first in your search results. Those decisions, those acts of classification, always reflect the worldview, the assumptions, maybe even the biases of the person or organization that created the system.
So every classification is an interpretation.
Exactly. It's an act of interpretation, and that means it's an act of power. By choosing how to organize information, the system makes some things easy to find, very visible, and other things, well, harder to find, marginalized.
Okay, that's a big point. So if the systems have these built-in perspectives, what about the role of technology itself? Chapter 5. Does the tech drive these biases?
Buckland pushes back hard against that idea, what's called technological determinism, the notion that technology itself dictates social change.
He doesn't buy that.
No. He sees technology more as an amplifier. It takes existing social tendencies, whatever is already going on in society, and scales them up.
So tech doesn't set the direction. It just makes us go faster in the direction we were already headed.
Sort of, yeah. If a society is pushing towards, say, more openness and democracy, technology can help amplify that. But if the tendency is towards control and surveillance, technology will amplify that instead.
The tool serves the intention. We have to decide what we want first.
Right. Decide the goal, like privacy or access or whatever, then choose and shape the tool. Don't let the tool dictate the values.
Which links into the economics of it all, Chapter 6. Information is weird stuff to sell, isn't it?
Totally weird. It's got this paradoxical nature. It's non-rivalrous.
Right.
Meaning, if I give you a piece of information, like a digital file, I still have it. My having it doesn't stop you from having it. Sharing doesn't deplete the supply, unlike, say, a sandwich.
Right. But it costs a lot to make in the first place.
Exactly. High fixed cost research, writing, producing the first copy.
Yeah.
But then the marginal cost, the cost to make one more copy is practically zero, especially digitally.
And that tension, high fixed cost, zero marginal cost, that drives all the fights about copyright and intellectual property versus open access.
Absolutely. It forces a fundamental policy choice. Is this knowledge a private good you can own and sell, or is it a public good that should be widely available?
Which means, ultimately, as he covers in Chapter 7 on policy, these debates about information, whether it's privacy, censorship, IP, they're not really technical debates.
No, they're political choices. Deep down, they're about what kind of society we want to live in, who gets access, who gets control.
Okay, wow. That's a lot to unpack. So, if we had to boil it down, what are the main messages, the key themes someone should really take away from this?
I think the first, maybe the most practical, is just understanding that foundational triad. Being able to consciously separate information as knowledge in your head from information as process, the learning part, and information as thing, the data or document itself.
How does making that distinction help day to day?
Well, when you feel overwhelmed by information, you can ask yourself, am I just collecting too many things? Or am I not putting in the process time to actually turn them into knowledge? It gives you a way to diagnose the problem.
That's useful. Okay, what's number two?
Systems embed bias, internalizing that, realizing that search engines, databases, even library catalogs aren't neutral windows onto the world. They are constructed perspectives.
And the reflection there.
Stop blaming the tech, maybe, and start questioning the assumptions of the designers. Why this result first? What viewpoint is being prioritized? What's being left out?
Critical thinking about the system itself.
Yeah.
Got it. Third theme.
Information access is a democratic imperative. Buckland really hammers this home. Inequality and access to information directly reinforces other kinds of social inequality, economic, political.
So things like public libraries or bridging the digital divide aren't just charity work.
Not at all. He'd argue they're essential infrastructure for democracy. For people to participate meaningfully, they need access to information.
Right. And the last key theme.
That point about technology amplifies doesn't dictate. Remembering we have agency. We're not just passive victims of algorithms or digital platforms. We make choices, personal and political, about how these tools are used and how they impact us.
Especially around things like our privacy or community life.
Exactly.
Buckland also has some really concise ways of putting these ideas. Are there any standout quotes or memorable lines?
I would definitely. One that sums up a lot is simply, information systems are social systems.
Meaning you can't just look at the tech in isolation.
Right. The technical bits are always embedded in human contexts, institutions, economic motives. You can't separate them.
Makes sense. Another one.
A really powerful one, getting at the political core. Access to information is access to power.
That's stark. It highlights how controlling who knows what is fundamental to social hierarchy.
Yeah. Controlling the flow of information is a key way to maintain power, or conversely, to challenge it.
And related to the bias point.
Every act of classification is an act of interpretation.
Ah, yes, that came up earlier. No organizing system is purely objective.
Never. We're always making choices based on our cultural framework, our values, when we decide how to label or categorize things.
So what does this all mean for us as citizens? Is there a quote for that?
There is. Information literacy is citizenship literacy in an information society.
Meaning, if you can't critically navigate these information systems,
you can't really function as a fully engaged citizen in today's world. It's that fundamental.
Okay, so how do we apply this? What are the real life applications? How can we use these ideas?
Well, the most direct application is boosting your own information literacy. Like we said, don't just take the first Google result. Ask those critical questions. Whose perspective is this? What biases might be in the ranking? What's missing?
Be a more active, questioning consumer of information.
Exactly. Huh. And on a personal level, use that thing versus knowledge distinction for personal information management.
How so?
Stop just collecting digital stuff, PDFs, bookmarks, notes everywhere. Focus your energy on the process part. How are you actually going to integrate this thing into your knowledge? Buckland talks about the attention economy. Our attention is finite. It's scarce. Be deliberate about where you spend it.
Don't just hoard data. Actually process it.
Right. And for anyone involved in policy or even just as an engaged citizen, yeah, this framework changes how you see debates about, say, online privacy or data surveillance. They stop being just technical problems with technical solutions.
They become political problems.
Political and social choices, yeah. Choices about who controls the documents, the data points that represent us online, and how that power is shared or concentrated.
It puts the human element back at the center.
Absolutely.
Okay, reflecting on all this, What was the biggest surprise or the insight you personally loved most from Buckland's work?
For me, honestly, it's still that incredibly broad definition of a document. That a rock can be a document.
Yeah.
It just clicks everything into place. It takes all the complexity of digital data and grounds it in this long, long history of humans using physical things as evidence. It offers such immediate clarity. That and the whole tripartite framework thing, process, knowledge, it just cuts through the confusion.
I agree. That framework is so clarifying.
Yeah.
What about you? What's the lasting insight or maybe a final challenge for our listeners?
I think the lasting message is that information science isn't just a technical field. It's fundamentally interdisciplinary. It's sociology, it's politics, it's economics, it's history. It challenges us to stop treating technology as some kind of inevitable force and instead focus on, well, working together to build information systems that actually reflect the values we want, like democratic principles, and that genuinely help people flourish.
So the provocative thought to leave people with.
If, as Buckland says, every classification is an interpretation, then what interpretations are shaping your view of the world right now, embedded in the systems you use every day that you might not even be aware of?
That's definitely something to think about. A great place to pause. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.